to CPAC Orlando. I've got Trevor Loudon here at the desk. My good friend Trevor Loudon. I saw him walking by. You guys heard me say, hey, grab Trevor. But first, we're going to go to Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. I called up Dr. Pry. I said, Dr. Pry, I'm at CPAC. I'm at CPAC, and there are experts walking all over the place. But the guy that I trust the most when it comes to Russia and when it comes to China and Taiwan and nuclear weapons and EMP and the whole historical background on this is my buddy. So I said, isn't it ironic? I'm at CPAC with all these experts walking around who are really good. But I gotta get an update from Dr. Pry because he's the one I really, really want to hear from on this big issue. So joining us, who, by the way, is feverishly writing a new column, so we're interrupting his writing. We thank him for that. But we wanted to get an update. I don't know how many of you were up till early in the morning watching the whole thing play out on national, international TV, but I was. Joining me now is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, author of numerous books, including his newest one, a nice, beautiful hardcover, Blackout Warfare, which you should all get at Amazon.com. Blackout Warfare, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Dr. Pry, welcome to Lindell TV. We're in CPAC, but we had to check in with you because we want your analysis of what's happening in Russia and Ukraine this morning, this afternoon. Is it morning or afternoon where I'm at? I don't know. But welcome to the show.
It's still morning, not quite noon yet, but thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for having me, Brandon. Well,
Thank you.
The large-scale invasion has happened. I think the Defense Department assessments are correct that Russia will make quick work of Ukraine and be able to overwhelm them. A metric of the disparity in the strength between the Russian and Ukrainian sides can be captured in the air forces. Ukraine has only got 70 modern fighter aircraft, and they haven't exercised them. They had a recent large-scale, if you want to call it that, with 70 aircraft exercise, but they basically haven't exercised or trained their air force in 2 years. And Russia's got nearly 2,000, fighter bombers that it can bring to bear on Ukraine that are well exercised and more modern than the Ukrainian aircraft. So there's an enormous disparity in air power, that will virtually guarantee Russia's quick victory over Ukraine. I'm concerned about the Biden administration policy. First, as you know from the past conversations we've had, the United States, in my view, shouldn't even be involved in this. We have no vital national interest, and we're risking, a wider war. Ukraine is is like Serbia of 1914, except it's a bigger powder keg in this age of nuclear missiles and cyber warfare, where things can escalate out of control at the speed of light, basically. The Biden administration policies are making it possible for this thing to escalate out of control. Biden has been arming the Ukrainian government and plans to try to turn Ukraine into a new Afghanistan for the Russians. So if the Ukrainian army is quickly defeated, they're hoping that there will be a Ukrainian insurgency, and they'll keep feeding arms to that Ukrainian insurgency. Basically, the Biden administration wants to stoke a protracted, bloody war, spill a lot of Russian blood in Ukraine, to punish Russia for violating Ukrainian sovereignty, for violating a fundamental principle of globalism, which is, to respect the national borders of other countries, even though the Biden administration seems to have no respect for our own national borders. This is really dangerous policy, because there's no guarantee that Russia will stop at the border of Ukraine. They may be provoked. Sound strategic planning on their part would say, let's not stop at Ukraine. We need to isolate it by invading the neighboring NATO states, at least to cut off the flow of arms that the Biden administration plans to supply to Ukraine. And this will give us greater defensive depth, and it will also give us a more advanced offensive capability. If we go into Poland, Romania, Hungary, which are the neighboring NATO states, also the Czech Republic and Slovakia, all of these are former Warsaw Pact states, now members of NATO, that cannot defend themselves. Their armies are not strong enough to defend themselves. Russia can our estimates are that Russia can probably overrun those states in days as well. And then it would, reconstitute the kind of Cold War threat that it posed to European NATO during the Cold War. It would have, be able to place its armored legions and air forces and missiles much closer to Western Europe and have a spearhead that could get to the English Channel very quickly. And the problem is, another part of the problem is that NATO is not what it used to be in the Cold War. I mean, there was a time when the United States had 5,000 main battle tanks. Back in 1989, we had 5,000 main battle tanks in Germany in order to protect NATO from being overrun by Russia. The Obama administration withdrew all those tanks because the Cold War was over. So we had zero main battle tanks in Germany. Trump started putting some back, but we only had, it was too little too late for this crisis. So we only have 100 U.S. main battle tanks in Germany. And Germany itself has less than 300 main battle tanks. And against this are 20,000 main battle tanks from Russia. He was another metric. I mean, all of, along the invasion route, Poland, Germany, France, the Benelux countries, all of them together are outnumbered by about 20 to 1 in terms of the number of Russian main battle tanks. And it's even worse than that, because NATO has never exercised projecting its collective forces, French tanks, Belgium tanks, Netherlander tanks, German tanks, have never projected exercising them, projecting them to Eastern Europe or into Germany so that they can fight collectively. The Russian army, they're basically territorial armies in NATO Europe, designed to defend their own borders, despite the theory of collective security. And so the Russian army will encounter these NATO European armies in penny packets, so they're even easier to destroy. So you'll have a case of, you know, a couple of hundred Polish tanks up against 20,000 Russian tanks. And then they'll go into Germany and face, you know, maybe 300 tanks plus the Americans, 400 tanks against 20,000 tanks, and those would be destroyed. This is assuming they don't even use their tactical nuclear weapons. They have a vast superiority in nuclear weapons. But I don't expect the biggest tragedy here, or great, threat here. I mean, we could be facing, if Russia wants it to happen, even if they don't go outside of Ukraine, we may be witnessing the transformation of the world order so that Russia and China become the dominant powers, because the Biden administration has put so much of its credibility on the line here in Ukraine that U.S. credibility is a guarantee of anybody's security will go into the toilet. You know, and
is this going to embolden China to move against Taiwan?
Sure, it will embolden our enemies all over the world. It will embolden China to move against Taiwan and Japan and Philippines. It will embolden North Korea to move against South Korea. It will embolden Iran to move against Israel. It could be a worst case where you have new Korean wars and a new big Middle Eastern war, or it could be lesser kinds of aggression, cyber attacks, but the aggression, terrorism, but the aggression, whatever the level of it, will certainly be encouraged by this obvious weakness of the United States and NATO. And I guess the most important bottom line I'd like to convey to your listeners, it's going to be the most important bottom line in this article that I'm just about done writing, is that, you know, we used to think of this as a contest between the free world and the unfree world, the world of tyranny, you know, but the new elites, because a lot of people say, instead of saving democracy in Ukraine, how about saving democracy here at home? And there's a lot of truth to that, because the United States, Canada, across the Western governments that are supposed to represent the free world are becoming more authoritarian themselves. But at the same time, they're a form of globalist authoritarianism that despises nationalism, okay? And that's why NATO has become a hollowed out militarily. You know, globalism has become an excuse for the socialist democrat governments of NATO Europe to not spend on their military forces, but put everything, put their resources into building a welfare state, you know, and building big government, not into their military. They've neglected the military. The military budget has paid for that, and you can see it by how weak NATO has become. NATO, European NATO, is counting on supranational globalist institutions like the United Nations, and international law, and the U.S. global policemen to provide for their security, not to provide for their own defense. Globalism doesn't build strong armies, as we can see in NATO Europe. Nationalism builds strong armies. And in the contest between globalism and nationalism, nationalism is going to win. The West is globalist,
wow,
and Russia and China are still nationalists. Nationalism builds strong armies, globalism doesn't. And I don't think, one would hope that, let us hope and pray, that Russia doesn't take advantage of NATO's weakness and expand this war into European NATO and take over all of European NATO, which it could. But let's hope that doesn't happen.
Well, let me ask you this real quick. Let me ask you this in conclusion, Dr. Pry.
Let me say this in conclusion. Even if it doesn't happen, I have little hope that the globalists of the West, the United States and NATO Europe, are going to shed their globalist ideals, even for their own survival. They've been so indoctrinated in despising nationalism and embracing globalism that I think that the military weakness in the West will probably continue. You know, they'll make up all kinds of excuses and say, well, just that economic sanctions, you know, which is a form of political theater. I think every thinking person realizes now that economic sanctions is not only ineffectual as a way of dealing with aggression, but it is actually a sign of another symptom of our weakness and is a form of political theater to try to convince the populations of the West that their governments are really doing something about punishing aggression, when in fact that kind of behavior, that weakness, really encourages aggression from military dictatorships that only respect military strength.
Wow. Dr. Pry, finally, you've been warning on our broadcast for months, maybe even years, that when these things start to happen, they can unravel, and they can unravel fast. This unraveled awfully fast. I mean, we thought maybe they'd do this in stages, but this has really unraveled fast, has it not?
Yes and no. It wasn't as fast as the Crimea situation. I mean, the Russians moved like lightning in Crimea. This has been compared to the kind of surprise attack and, in Russian military doctrine, they're big believers in achieving strategic and tactical surprise. What impresses me about all this is that the Russians deliberately, you know, did this in our face, in front of our face. They sacrificed strategic surprise. They sacrificed tactical surprise. And that is a sign that they basically have contempt for Western military power. You know, it's like a bully coming over to you and telling you what he's going to do to you, you know, or do to a friend. And then he does it right in front of you, giving you every opportunity to react, you know, but knowing that you are basically powerless to do anything about it. And that's what I get. That's what I think is evidenced by this slow build-up of Russia to the invasion of Ukraine. And then when the invasion actually happens, it's happening swiftly, but it's not coming as a surprise to us. I mean, the West can't use that as an excuse.
No, it's not. You warned about it. You were warning about it. You were warning about it right here.
Right.
And in your articles.
They've been building up to the... I mean, last April, they almost did it. You know, so we've had plenty of strategic warning. Now we've had plenty of strategic and tactical warning, and we're powerless to stop them anyway. And I think they want the world to see that, because it isn't just about Ukraine. It's about destroying U.S. NATO credibility, and destroying U.S. credibility. You know, NATO may not survive this, even if Russia doesn't invade NATO, because of the fracturing that's already happened in NATO. You know, Germany is one example, but many of the NATO member states are not following the lead of the United States. They don't want to arm Ukraine. They don't want, you know, to support the Biden plans for stoking war in Ukraine against Russia. They remember the horrors of World War II, you know, and they don't want their countries destroyed in another world war. They belong to NATO because they were counting on the United States to protect them. That's why the East European countries joined NATO. But we never had the ability to protect them there. And I was against the expansion of NATO. I thought it was strategically unwise and ethically wrong to promise to defend countries that we can't protect. The only plausible way that we could have protected them, the only possible way would be with nuclear weapons, if we were willing to go to nuclear war to defend countries like Latvia and Lithuania and Slovakia and the other NATO member states that are way out there, you know, beyond our ability to project conventional forces. And ironically, the Biden administration, President Biden, who has been the most anti-nuclear president we've ever had, and his administration is the most anti-nuclear administration we've ever had, is basically relying on the nuclear. They're not saying it publicly, but these thousands of troops that they've sent into Eastern Europe, I mean, all of it, from us and from our West European allies, amounts to about 10,000 troops. That is not enough conventional firepower. A dozen fighter aircraft, and we actually had the temerity to send a B-52 to Poland, a couple of B-52s to Poland. That's rattling the nuclear saber on our side, both the tactical and strategic nuclear saber, because those 10,000 troops are just a nuclear tripwire. That's what that's about. So that if Russia does invade the NATO member states, they'll kill American soldiers, and the Kremlin is supposed to be afraid that if they kill these 10,000 American soldiers, that we'll go to nuclear war. You know, does the Kremlin believe that? I don't think they do. President Biden just, you know, in the summer said a nuclear war must never be fought and cannot be won. And he has very close adopting a nuclear no first use pledge, where the United States would never use nuclear weapons first. The other side would have to use them before we would use them. And if the other side uses nuclear weapons first, we won't be able to use them second. You know, certainly they would be able to destroy our tactical nuclear forces in Europe and probably our strategic nuclear forces in the first strike if we wait to go second. But they don't even need to use nuclear weapons. You know, they've got overwhelming conventional superiority over not just in Ukraine, but against the whole NATO alliance, all the way to the English Channel, through the invasion pathway that they would have to go. So let's hope that the worst doesn't happen and that they don't, you know, invade NATO. But like I said, I think that the West isn't going to learn anything, even if God is merciful and the Russians are confined to Ukraine and they end their aggression within the borders of Ukraine. I'll bet the Biden administration will find some way to declare that a victory. You know, he'll say something like, oh, they didn't invade NATO. See, I got them. I held them off from invading NATO. They were afraid to do it because of our forward deployment.
Right.
And then the left will, when the nuclear posture review is done, this is a document that Biden has been preparing, and usually when these nuclear posture reviews are done, they're an opportunity to dramatically change U.S. nuclear policy in terms of the numbers of weapons and what our doctrine is. I can hear the left arguing now, if we're lucky enough that Russia stops its aggression in Ukraine, I can hear them saying, well, you see, we managed to deter the Russians from invading NATO, so we don't need to make more investments in our conventional forces or in our nuclear forces. You know, we don't need to try to catch up with the Russians because what we've got is adequate, probably more than adequate. So let's spend less money on our defense and let's spend less money on nuclear modernization. In fact, what the left wants to do is really gut our nuclear forces, both in terms of policy, like nuclear no first use, and as well as platforms, like getting rid of our ICBMs, getting rid of our strategic nuclear bombers, like the B-52 that Biden sent to Poland. You know, so What an irony that this anti-nuclear president has grasped the nuclear deterrent as his only really credible means. And I don't know how credible it is anymore because of what he said and done, you know, to try to stave off the bear from going into European NATO.
Wow. Dr. Pry, thank you so much for taking time from your busy schedule today and interviews and articles you're writing. We look forward to those, as always. We're here at CPAC in Orlando, but I felt like, hey, we've got to get on the phone. I know there are a lot of experts here, but we want you're our guy, and we like your analysis and want your analysis and trust your analysis. So thank you for carving out time and joining us here on Lindell TV as we're live in Orlando, Dr. Pry.
Okay. Well, thank you, Brandon, for the opportunity to speak to you and your people.
Thank you. And folks, I hope you'll go to Amazon and check out his books. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, his latest, a beautiful hardcover, but about a very, very important topic, blackout warfare. Blackout warfare. He has a lot of other books. You'll find them at Amazon. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. They also are vital books to purchase and put into the hands of your local, state, and federal leaders. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. We're glad he's on our side, aren't we?